Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. This week we bring you an interview with the superyacht owner Merle Heinrich. We caught up with Merle on board his boat Double Haven at the recent Palm Beach International Boat Show. If you don't know Double Haven, it's a 51-meter Fedship delivered in 1993 and was one of the first original true explorer yachts in which Merle and his family have had some truly incredible adventures, many of which he relates in this interview. So without further ado, here is my interview with Merle Heinrich. Merle, thank you so much for sitting with me in the beautiful saloon of Double Haven. And coming aboard the other day for the first time ever, I was struck by just how good the boat looks despite her age. I mean, it's obviously a point of pride to keep the boat in impeccable condition because she really does look very, very lovely indeed.
Well, we started off with a good boat.
That helps.
And that helped. That helped a great deal. But it has been home. And so the intent was to keep it, you know, to current standards and would complement the family's interest and the security, et cetera. So, yes, it's in a good nick, and we would hope to keep it that way. And hopefully the next buyer would do it as well.
So she's at the Palm Beach Boat Show because she's obviously for sale. So why have you chosen to sell her now?
We've had it for 30 years.
Yeah.
I'm 83. We don't dive quite as frequently as we have in the past. Our lifestyle has changed a little bit, and we don't get the time on board that we would like. So it's sort of that time in our life that we're sort of moving to other things and to somewhat not intended retirement, but needed retirement.
Sure. And your lives are Singapore-based.
True. We are in Singapore. Singapore, there are a few restrictions on recreational vessels. So should we look for a second vessel, we would look for a vessel that was probably a bit smaller, less than 40 meters, but that would be adequate and appropriate to Singapore. Mm-hmm. And to the Malacca Straits.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because not many of the people listening to this will have cruised that area. It is a lovely place to spend some time on a boat.
It is. There is a lot going for Southeast Asia. Thousands of islands in Indonesia alone, to say nothing about Malaysia. And you have, you know, from the northern part of the Malaysian Peninsula, you have Phuket in the north, which is a beautiful setting in all times of year, really, down to KL, Kuala Lumpur, down to the Malacca area, which is history. There's a lot of history in this area. Singapore, of course, Jakarta, and then, of course, across all of Indonesia, which is vast, in fact. And each area is a little different in culture and religion, and it's a fascinating country. So, yes, we've enjoyed cruising in Indonesia. The highlight for us in Indonesia was the diving.
Mm.
The diving is just spectacular. I think Raja Ampat, which is to the east, farther to the east, at Papua New Guinea, or just to the west of Papua New Guinea, is a highlight. It's a preserve, and it is really well protected by the Indonesian police. Marine, please.
And people often rave about Raja Ampat as a diving destination, but Komodo is also very, very special. But quite different landscapes, aren't they, really?
Oh, totally, totally, yeah. You don't have you have currents and tides at both locations, but you do not have as much of tidal action in Raja Ampat as you do in the Komodo area.
Mm.
But the Komodo area is beautiful. It's really quite beautiful.
And this boat is very suited for those waters because she is an explorer.
Totally.
And that's why she was built. I mean, you built her to
totally
see the world.
We built a vessel that it could be independent in anywhere within any condition. So we can, as an example, we can provision for 6 months for crew and for our guests, etc. We have actually cruised for 3 or 4 months without provisioning.
Wow.
We've never pushed that limit, mind you, but we've got pretty close. It also, you know, it's like a little bit of a town. We have our own generation or equipment, and we never use shore power. So that's one. We have 34,000 gallons of fuel capacity. So we have a range of about 7,000 miles on it. It's a full displacement vessel, so and ocean going. Everything on the vessel can be locked down for very long cruises.
And were you aware, obviously the intent was to cruise the world and see the world in Double Haven, but were you aware just how groundbreaking the boat would be considered when you were building her? Because there are some unusual aspects of this boat that you don't always find on others.
You know, Stuart, we weren't really looking to break records or change designs. What we did do on the boat were things with which we felt appropriate and necessary and needed. And things like vertical windows, it just made total sense to me. Mm. You see them on tugs, you see them on commercial vessels. And the original captain, Nick Spence, Nick and I spent a lot of time looking at yachts, comparable yachts. We had both had previous sea time, so we knew more or less what would work and what was in question. We knew that, you know, we, for example, you can see here the port lights. That was a first as well. Those port lights are very substantial. Now it's a common on a lot of newer vessels. That's the second area. Having a owner's deck at that time was unusual.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was done before, but it is an entirely private deck or can be made as a private deck. And it doesn't mean that it's, you know, exclusive. We have everybody has access to it. But should we have those evenings that my wife and I would just like to be on our own, we can do so. And guests and what have you, and family, can use the boat unrestricted, really. And also having private access to the sun deck. Mm. So there, you know, there's a lot of little detail to make that happen. And it starts with the planning. You don't retrofit those kind of things. You have to think them through. Maybe the fourth real substantial, let's say, design feature with which you saw rarely 30 years ago was an open transom.
Yeah.
And this transom, we looked at a number of vessels. We took into consideration, you know, the following seas and any kind of security issue. But we designed it so that water, if water was to come over the transom, that it would flow through very quickly. So totally secure. But far, far more importantly is that we have a tender here with which is large enough to take care of tendering people back and forth to the shore. It is a catamaran and it is a jet, so we can get into very shallow waters and it can easily carry a dozen people comfortably. We use it also for diving, extensively for diving, and we have racks for our tanks, and it's laid out in a way that people can jump off and come back safely. We use it for fishing a lot, certainly in Alaska, which is one of my favorites. So it's a very utilitarian vessel and makes for a far more pleasurable experience on board a boat.
I mean, it is a deeply considered boat, this one. You can tell, obviously, you and your first captain spent a lot of time poring over the details, but how long was that kind of planning phase in the engineering and design phase?
Well, actually, I had a boat before called Westwind, and it was a 65-foot Choi Li on which he was the captain.
Okay.
So we had nightly discussions, design meetings, if you would say. So it took us formally probably a good 2 years. But informally, we had a lot of pre-discussions and of course with my wife and family as to what we were looking for. Yeah, you know. And it was fun. It was just the dream, you know.
Yeah. So. It is, what do we want? What can we achieve on this boat? I mean, things like the folding transom, the owner's deck, the amount of light that comes into this saloon, for instance, all of it is. And also the various mezzanines and the way the bridge is up a few steps and that the owner's staterooms, apartment really, isn't it? It's vast and you kind of step down into a huge bathroom. And you seem to have packed an awful lot of functionality and features onto a platform that almost you think, how is it possible to achieve that with this LOA? But because, I guess.
And yet it doesn't feel congested.
No, it doesn't at all.
No, it feels open and spacious, a lot of light. Color is important. Lighting is important for these, to accommodate the features as well.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very livable boat. My wife and I have actually lived for the first 2 or 3 years. We were on the boat at least 6 months a year.
Wow.
And then in COVID, we stayed on the boat as well in Singapore. And we were at home. I mean, everything is here. And even our stateroom, not only is it a bedroom, but we have a living room and we have a kitchenette. So we are, quite independent. Of the rest of whatever goes on the boat.
And just on the, is that the original tender as well?
No, that is the third
tender.
I kept refining the tender, enhancing it a little bit as we went along. Yeah.
And back in the early 90s, when this project was conceived, you found FedShip.
1960s. Well, 1994, sorry.
Yeah.
1994, we took delivery.
Yes.
June 8th, 1994. Yeah.
And then FedShip, obviously, was the builder.
Right.
Was at the time, there weren't that many yards you could take on a custom project of this size and scope. I mean, was it a tendering process or did you deliberately go to FedShip knowing that they could do the job?
No, it was a tendering process. I had two naval architects before I went to any yard to do all of the build documents and the engineering specifications in order to be effective in communicating to yard, a prospective yard, what we were looking for, what we wanted, and not just going to a yard and expecting the yard to provide us engineering drawings, which were often, those were built, used for other boats, right? So we had it. Needless to say, we knew that even when we went out for tender, there would be a lot of adjustment as to structure and engineering, et cetera. But at least we had the basis of a design as to what we were looking for.
Mm. And the build process was enjoyable? Is that it?
it was. No complaints, because FedShip is such a professional organization to start with, and they've served so many prospective owners, and I think that they really enjoyed the challenge of Double Haven at that time. I mean, it was, as you said, it was sort of pushed the envelope on a lot of features and functions, and the form was following function, as opposed to the reverse. And we didn't come to them asking them to do the engineering initially. That followed. Nor did we come to them and were speculating on design. We had the design. We had the basis of a design that we wanted. And they executed well. They listened. They listened, which is an interesting criteria these days.
Well, actually, form follows function. Because I was looking through the build book for Double Haven, and that was one of the key points made early on in the book.
Yeah,
and yet it's a nice looking boat. It's not a stocky, blocky kind of Lego brick kind of boat. It's a very elegant boat. So
it's remained so. I mean, tradition. It's not. You can't really say it's traditional in its appearance, but it is ageless.
Yeah,
I can put it that way. It's just sort of ageless.
Yeah, absolutely. And your crew over the years must be, they are clearly a top-notch bunch because, the interior, as you were explaining to me the other day, hasn't really changed all that much. And a lot of the furnishings are original, and yet they look like they could have been delivered yesterday.
All the dining chairs, all that area is all the same. All the sofas which were on have been recovered once. The carpet in the back, the transmitter, that's original. All the marble, everything, all the rest of it is original.
Yeah.
This carpet has been changed once. Yeah, in 30 years, not bad. But as I shared with you the other day, Stuart, the key to this was, needless to say, having good staff that covered everything when we were not here. But probably more importantly, the vessel has never been without air conditioning, right? This has been air conditioned 24/7, 365 days a year for 32 years. And so you avoid any shrinking of wood expansion of wood. And more importantly, all the fabric, you don't have a deterioration of fabric. And I would say one third point, there is no smell.
Yeah, very true.
You do not smell any must, yes, or any of that old smell on this boat.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's sort of like a time capsule. It's like it's like a boat was built in 1994, put away kind of an aspic, and then released in 2025. I mean, that's the sensation you get on board. Yeah. It doesn't look like it's circumnavigated the globe three times, certainly.
Well, we did circumnavigate the globe three times, but not on purpose. It just happened. We just kept going around the world, and just enjoyed where we were going. So we've been on both the West Coast and the East Coast of the U.S. and South America. Been to Galapagos, and then in Asia, we've been all over Asia, literally from Japan, not quite to Pakistan, but India and all Southeast Asia. We've spent a lot of time in Asia, and we've spent a lot of time in Europe as well.
And I was told the other day, because we're in the planning, obviously, because you're going to some pretty far out places with this boat, the windows are bulletproof?
The windows are all bulletproof. That came about sort of incidentally. We were looking at glass for these large pore lights. And the manufacturer, a French manufacturer at the time, he said, you are at a point of standard with which is a bulletproof standard. I said, well, tell me more. And we felt, well, okay, let's give that thought. And we did. It wasn't that much more expensive to take it to that certification level. Now, it's not bazooka proof. It's not missile proof. But it is, you just sort of want to avoid the incidents of a casual shooter, if you wish.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we've never had an incident, not to my knowledge, of it ever any pot shots at the boat. You know?
So let's talk about your world adventures. So how you mentioned the circumnavigation sort of happened by accident. How does circumnavigation happen by accident?
Well, when the boat was delivered, we went to the Caribbean first. Then after we were in the Caribbean, sort of the inaugural, launch and cruise, we decided, well, now should we go to the Mediterranean? Should we go to, should we go through the canal? So then we went through the canal, and then we went around, from east to west, right? And so we just kept drifting. We kept drifting around to the west and said, oh, maybe we should go through the Suez. And then we ended up through the Suez, and we ended up in Israel. Then we ended up in Greece. Then we went around, and then we went back to the Caribbean, right?
Yeah.
So that was number one, and everything in between. Then the next one, we wanted to see certain things. And I think we went the reverse. And then the second one, we spent quite a bit of time in the Baltics, which was not planned. I mean, we just went. My wife was Danish. And so we spent time in Denmark. And it was lovely. We really had an enjoyable summer there. So we did all the Baltics, and we came back, and we did the Mediterranean in the winter again, and went back to Asia the other way, right? So as I said, it wasn't a plan like we're going to circumnavigate the world. It just happened, And people say, oh, you circumnavigate the world. Yeah, but it just was It just happened.
By accident.
Yeah, yeah.
And SATCOMs being what they were then, obviously you were still running a professional life as well. So how did you kind of interact with the office? And
well, we all always relied, you know, you may recall that there was such a thing as a fax,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So a lot of faxing going, we went through that particular period of time, but we've always maintained the latest communication, the latest networking on board, both for cruising and then for my own needs when I was underway. Now Skylink, you know, the upgrade on Skylink is just magic, right?
Yeah.
Uplinking, downlinking, it's just incredible, and at a cost with which, you know, as a fraction of what we paid before.
Yeah.
But communications on board was always really quite important. The cell phones helped a lot.
Sure.
Right, the introduction of cell phones, which we've had for, you know, 10 years, you know, already at least 10 years. So it was only the first few years that we didn't have the level of communication, but that has improved dramatically. Yeah.
And have you got any, given that you've been everywhere, more or less, I mean, have you got you mentioned obviously the Baltics and Denmark and all the wonderful archipelagos, yeah, up there, but have you got any other particular favorites?
Where we may wish to go, we haven't been to the Antarctica.
Okay. Okay.
And we haven't been to South Africa or Madagascar. And I understand that was on my bucket list of Madagascar, the diving off the south tip of Madagascar.
So generally were all the destinations, the warm water destinations, driven by diving?
They were in part. That's true, right. My wife refused dry suits, and I didn't find dry suits very comfortable for cold weather or cold water either. So we were looking for warm water.
Yeah.
And so that sort of led a lot of the destination selection too. Yeah.
And in the 30 years you have been cruising Double Haven around the world, I mean, what are the principal changes that you've noticed? Is it a lot more boat traffic? Are areas more or less secure?
One of the things with which is, you know, just the bleaching of the coral,
yeah,
around the world, the change of water temperatures. Unfortunately, the amount of garbage in the water is notable. The change in standards for vessels, the criteria that are building to rebuild today is probably 10 times more complex than the standards are. Some of them have, I think, been an improvement. Others are unnecessary. The pollution area, of course, we're all concerned about the pollution and need to address it. And I think the marine industry largely, and certainly FedShip, I know, has put a lot of attention to any form of pollution and have improved upon it a lot. So those are a lot of the changes. Of course, as we've spoke, the communication changes have been dramatic.
Mm.
Distances are much the same. There are still those beautiful isolated destinations which people don't typically go to. You know, Micronesia and places like Palau are beautiful, absolutely beautiful, and which I would go back in a heartbeat just to enjoy it. You know?
Yeah, the pictures of those areas, mm-hmm. My cruising around that region is fairly limited, but the pictures just look spectacular. Particularly Palau looks magical.
Yeah, yeah. I'm afraid to say that places like Alaska, when we first went there, we went there on Westwind before, so that was more than 40 years ago. But even after that, and we had Double Haven, we went up. It has changed a lot because of the cruise liners. And the cruise liners have literally taken over a lot of the port areas, right, and the main runs, with which have changed the complexion of these small. Juno is not the Juno I remember. Sitka is not the same Sitka. So now when we go, we don't go to these major city or major. We don't go to towns with which cruise liners go to ever, because it's, you know, it's a bit of a zoo.
Mm.
So we go out to the outer islands and enjoy the privacy of the islands. Yeah.
And there must have been a few places you visited in your early cruising that had never seen a boat like this before. So some of those interactions must have been pretty amazing.
Oh, absolutely. We were at an atoll in the Pacific in Micronesia called the Ant Lagoon. And it was an incredibly beautiful volcanic little island. There was a small town on the east side, and then there was a little village that lived all the way to the left, all the way to the west end of it, with a population of not more than 12, 15 people. Okay. And we, by total chance, were on the inside of this. There was only one entryway. And we sailed to the small little village, and they had never seen a boat like this. So we were doing exchanges, you know what? And they had coconut crabs, right? It's a single clawed crab, right? And it opens coconuts with one little twist of its claw. Delicious, absolutely delicious. So they were trading. What did they want? They wanted to have some diesel fuel, needless to say, for their generator, and then they wanted some mayonnaise.
No way.
They wanted some mayonnaise and ketchup. And so fortunately we had a little bit of mayonnaise and ketchup on board for them, which they were delighted to have. We had many, many memorable things like this took place.
Yeah. Is there one image of a island or a beach that particularly sticks in your memory?
Well, that is one. That is one for sure. I can't. There are so many. There's hundreds of them. Yeah. To point to one, in the Philippines, there are some absolute beautiful, beautiful islands, and there are a lot of them that have wrecks, you know, from the Second World War, with which are notable and fascinating to. That's not an island per se, but that's sort of a location that is really quite interesting.
And you mentioned Raja Ampat as a great diving spot. Would you rate that in all your experiences kind of number one?
Yes, I think it is certainly within the top five.
Yeah.
Red Sea would be certainly another. There are others as well. But I think my interest is that I enjoy history, and I enjoy the history of the early sailors and the ports. The ports of Asia were, of course, really very interesting, between the Dutch explorers and the English and the French and the Germans. And, you know, they were all out there and left their imprint. So that was sort of an interesting experience of being able to go to some of these very small locations that were under colonial control and left behind certain colonial histories, right? Singapore, of course, stands out, and Hong Kong stands out, but there were a lot of in Southeast Asia, especially in Indonesia, under the Dutch, you know. Not all positive, mind you.
No, of course. Yeah. But the architectural legacies are,
some
of it's quite elegant. I mean, some parts of the world you can go and you sort of look like it could be a Dutch street, or you see...
That's true. That's absolutely true. And a lot of Dutch characters.
What about China and Japan? Did they ever feature any of your adventures?
Oh, absolutely. We were in Japan several times. We sailed Inland Sea of Japan three times, I think. And again, the history, the trading history of Kagoshima and that area was absolutely precious. And I had a guy on trips in Japan, I always had a historian that would travel with me. And when we would go on shore, we would go on shore specifically to see museums or forests or what have you, parks. Some of the parks in Japan are just precious, totally precious.
It seems to me that Japan is an underappreciated cruising country. I mean, it's,
but it is transited a lot. It is a mariner country, if you wish.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on in Japan. In Japan, I mean, Japan is not a small economy. So the Inland Sea of Japan is, you know, not isolated. In Japan, there are a lot of people.
Yeah.
That are using it. We were in Osaka and Kobe and all those areas for some time.
But a bit like New Zealand, almost, it just lends itself to cruising because there's lots of little, you know, nips and tucks in the coastline where you can, you know, find a bit of shelter and move on.
Well, New Zealand in the north is great. The Thousand Islands and stuff, that area is just, again, bright. But the South Island is not so great.
That's true, yeah.
You know, I like the North Island for sailing. Unless you're on the West Coast and you're in the glacier area on the west coast of the South Island, right? It's beautiful as well.
Yeah.
But so I'm a New Zealand resident as well.
Okay.
So I've spent quite a bit of time in New Zealand.
Yeah.
The
fishing there's spectacular.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And then 100-mile coast, you know, on the west side of the North Island. Whoa. Totally isolated. You've been there?
I've fished and cruised the Bay of Islands a little bit.
The Bay of Islands, yeah. We're just on the opposite side.
Yeah.
There's literally 100-mile beach, isolated, totally isolated, and absolutely pristine. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, wild horses are running up and down the beach, you know.
But it's great. I mean, the adventure still is out there, despite the world shrinking, seemingly, with communications. There's still plenty of things you can go and see and feel like it's a rare experience.
Absolutely. Anybody that is interested in and ambitious enough to do it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's lots of talk about explorer yachts at the moment. So there's more and more explorer yachts being built because people do want to
circumnavigate Canada.
Yeah.
Go through the North Channel.
Well, yeah, the Northwest Passage is
Northwest Passage is
really exciting for lots of people. I'd love to do that. But it seems to me there's a greater sense of adventure kind of penetrating the super yacht consciousness. You know, people want to get out there and do more things and get out of the milk run.
Absolutely. I think anybody is that building a boat of this size or larger, you know, do not do themselves justice or do not do the boat justice if they don't take on a little bit of an explorer mindset.
Yeah.
Even Newfoundland, you go to Newfoundland, it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
So given your considerable experience building a boat, owning a boat, running a boat, circumnavigating, I mean, what, to anyone, you know, thinking about doing the same, what would be your principal advice?
Probably three things. One, you better have plenty of money.
That's quite an important one.
Number two, you better have, and it's preferable that you have plenty of time.
Yeah.
You know? You have time in building the boat and then and really understanding and taking and figuring out how you gain experience to be able to articulate what you want in a vessel, because it's not a small expense. Unless you're buying a 30 or 40 foot boat that you're going to go fishing with, that's another thing.
Mm.
But a vessel that you plan on living on and being on this custom build, you better think carefully about how to do it. So having time to do that, and equally time after it's launched to really enjoy it, right? And that means that you're not, you know, placated with all the problems at home.
Yeah.
And the third, patience. You need to be patient. You need to slow down. And everything has its, you know, cycles. Not just the weather, but a lot of other things.
Patience does seem in shorter supply nowadays.
Yeah, money, time, and patience. That pretty well covers it.
Yeah. And I think people have it in their mind's eye that they have to have a firm plan, right? We're going to go there, A, B, C, D, and then we'll get... But as you've proven, just drifting east or west, seeing where the wind takes you.
Forget the plan.
Yeah.
I mean, you might, of course, we all have plans and all our bucket lists and destinations and what have you. But just to enjoy it, just enjoy the process. If you like someplace, you know, spend the time and stay there. I mean, a year ago or so, we were in Colombia. What a beautiful country. You know, we were in Cartagena, and the history and the forts and, it's precious, totally precious.
Yeah.
You know, and now safer than what it was 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, Colombia is definitely an up-and-coming superyacht destination. Yeah. People seem to really enjoy it.
Yeah. And beautiful beaches, too.
So if Double Haven sells tomorrow, it would be a bittersweet parting, I'm guessing.
That's well put. Yeah. Bittersweet.
Yeah. And then, but it's not the end of your yachting adventures. I mean, there might be something smaller in your future.
True. As I said earlier in our discussions, is that living in Singapore, I would look for something that would probably accommodate our situation in Singapore. If we have a vessel like this, you know, big criteria is using it.
Yeah.
And if you're not, it's such a waste. It's such a waste.
Well, I hope the next owner does appreciate the what they have on their hands, because it is a boat that is immensely capable, as you've proven. Can go anywhere, do anything, be autonomous.
Yeah.
And
it's ready to go.
It's ready to go. And it's in and it's in great nick. I mean, very, very well kept.
We're not having to wait 4 years for a build.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, it's a special, it really, you're correct. It's not everyone's cup of tea. It really is a buyer that is looking to have a lifestyle similar to what we've just discussed, right, in some ways. Right?
Well, it's... sounds like a pretty good lifestyle.
True.
Well, Merle, it's been such a joy sitting with you this morning at the Palm Beach Boat Show. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Not at all.
And I look forward to seeing what boat joins the fleet next.
Well, come to Singapore.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's Boat Briefing. I really hope you enjoyed that interview with one of the most forward-thinking, game-changing superyacht owners out there. As ever, don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you next time.